So on January 9th, 2017, Sinn Féin's Martin McGuinness resigned as Deputy First Minister, citing the DUP's conduct around RHI as the main reason. That triggered the collapse of the Northern Ireland Assembly. It's now 2 years later, but have you missed it? What impact has the lack of a functioning Stormont had on your life? And that issue around pay there, they've just had their second pay cut for MLAs, but would you cut it, reduce that money even further? 03030 80 55 55 on the line, the Alliance leader, Naomi Long. Good morning, Naomi.
Good morning.
Jim Wells from the DUP. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Vinny.
And Patrick Corrigan from Amnesty. Good morning to you, Patrick.
Good morning, Vinny.
Patrick, we'll start with you. Amnesty have said that the 2 year Stormont deadlock has trapped rights in political limbo.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, really, we have this pretty awful situation that up at Stormont, the lights are on, but no one is home, at least politically. And at Westminster, we have a government in power, but refusing to take responsibility, and trapped in the middle of this political limbo are people in Northern Ireland, whether it's same-sex couples still unable to legally get married, women subject to some of the most draconian and outdated abortion laws in the world and unable to get change, or victims of institutional child abuse 2 years on, 2.5 years on, really, from the end of that inquiry headed by Sir Anthony Hart. Still no apology and not a penny in compensation. So it's ordinary people, victims of human rights violations, people left with a human rights deficit in their lives, who are being most adversely affected. And we're saying today that 2 years on, with no political talks happening and no prospect in sight of Stormont returning, that Westminster, the UK government, Karen Bradley, can no longer simply finger point to politicians at Stormont. She now needs to take responsibility to put right some of these human wrongs and actually legislate and take responsibility for human rights and for people in Northern Ireland.
So further direct rule, that's where you think we should go, Patrick?
Well, you know, we've sort of tried to not get involved in the whole direct rule versus devolution debate and instead focus on delivery of human rights for ordinary people in Northern Ireland. That's what's not happening at the moment.
But obviously, Patrick, somebody has to deliver them. They have to come from one side of the fence or the other, either Stormont.
Correct. And yeah. I think it was very notable at the end of last year when David Stirling, the head of the Northern Ireland Civil Service, published the officials' proposals to deal with victims of institutional child abuse, that he said at the end of that consultation, which I should note is coming up just next month, that when proposals are put on the table for legislation, if we don't have a parliament, if we don't have a government at Stormont, then there is, and I quote him, a moral responsibility on the Secretary of State to take control of the issue. And we would say that moral responsibility exists across these other human rights issues as well. Same-sex couples and the denial of the right to get married, access to abortion for women in crisis pregnancy situations, who look across the border, who look across the REC and see women able to access their rights because of where they live and see their rights being denied here because they live in Northern Ireland.
So who do you blame, Patrick, for the current position we find ourselves in? Because, of course, the likes of Sinn Féin would say their red line it relates to human rights to the LGBT community. So who do you blame for where we are?
Well, there's an awful lot of blame to go around. I mean, the fact is that the Stormont we had was dysfunctional. So it is not simply a panacea in terms of saying let's get Stormont up and running again. Because if we got it up and running on the basis that it was running before, it actually would be a blockage to human rights for many people in Northern Ireland rather than a delivery mechanism. So, yes, of course, many people want to see a return of Stormont, but it has to be a Stormont that's going to deliver for people. And that means reform, for instance, of the petition of concern mechanism, which has become a blockage for human rights for people here, as well as other reforms around transparency of government. And your programme has repeatedly covered how Stormont has been dysfunctional, how it has operated behind closed doors with SPADs, with refusal to cooperate with freedom of information inquiry mechanisms, etc. So it needs to be a wholly reformed Stormont. But meanwhile, because there is no return of Stormont in sight, meanwhile, we do need Westminster to take responsibility for these range of human rights issues.
Okay.
ordinary people aren't the political casualties of political failure at Stormont and indeed at Westminster. It's no good for Karen Bradley simply to wash her hands of it. She is the woman with the big job and with the big salary to deliver for people, and she needs to start taking that responsibility seriously.
Jim Wells, what are people on the ground saying to you? People that voted for the DUP, are they happy with the current state of Northern Ireland? Do they want your party, for example, to do something else?
No, I don't think people generally are happy. Vinnie, what I would say to you is they all recognise, at least amongst the unionist community, who's entirely responsible. This time, 2 years ago, Martin McGuinness resigned, refused then to renominate a Deputy First Minister, and the institutions collapsed. The DUP had no part, indeed none of the other parties had any part in this. Sinn Féin decided to throw the toys out of the pram and run away, and the result is that their veto has meant that there has been no return of devolution since. And they said they'll come back if three demands are made, are agreed to. One's homosexual marriage. The second one is an Irish Language Act. And the third is the elimination of Arlene Foster's First Minister, that she has to go. Now, they know that those are unacceptable. Now, we could have turned around and said, right, well, we want flags to be flown 365 days a year, want traditional parades to go down their traditional routes.
Were some of those dropped in that draft agreement which the DUP allegedly rejected? Is that accurate?
There was no mention of the gay marriage issue at all, or the removal of Arlene Foster from what was.
So there you go. Sinn Féin might say, well, that was some movement and some compromise which your party rejected.
But what they knew was absolutely unacceptable to the unionist community was any imposition of the Irish language on the community. And I have been at various meetings in South Down many times since, and I haven't met a single unionist of any description, no matter how moderate, who would be in favour of those moves to promote the Irish language.
And there we come back to where we keep getting stuck when we have this kind of discussion, Jim Wells, which is the red lines. Who has red lines?
Because we've none.
Yeah, but you've just outlined, for example, the Irish Language Act and how that would be unacceptable. That would be interpreted by many as a red line.
But the forum to debate that is Stormont. What we could demand that all traditional loyalist parades go down their routes. And we could say we're going to withdraw from Stormont until that's happened, but we didn't.
Yeah, but there also then is the petition of concern, which could be used then as a veto when it gets back in there. So you can see why some might be reluctant to go down that path.
And Sinn Féin used it on the definite redefinition of what constitutes a victim. Sinn Féin were very quick to use it as well. But what I'm saying to you is that you don't bring down the institutions because you don't get your way. You have to go in there and debate and try and argue your point. Sinn Féin simply said, as a result of pressure from its hardliners in the Felons Club, Sinn Féin decided we're going to get out and we're going to run away with the ball, as it were, and we're not playing. Meanwhile, all the other parties said they were more than happy to stay in there and to thrash these issues out.
Well, we did bid for someone from Sinn Féin to come on the programme, but I'm not sure if they've not come back or responded to us at this point. Naomi Long, the issue when we have these conversations is it straight away turns to finger pointing, blaming other parties, and it doesn't help people that perhaps are suffering because of the lack of Stormont.
Well, I mean, I would completely agree with that. And even when Jim gives his analysis, he talks about what it is that unionists want. And I understand that he's elected to represent unionist concerns. But when he's in the Assembly, he's there to represent the whole community and to try to find a way forward that is actually conducive to good community relations. And I think at times people lose sight of that and they're only interested in arguing the case for one side of the community rather than for everyone. He's absolutely correct, of course, that it's not right and none of the other parties collapsed the Assembly. But we are where we are. We are in this situation and it is pretty clear that none of the parties, his own included, would go back into the Assembly unless there is significant reform. In his own party's case, they've said that they want to see the institutions reformed so that they can't be collapsed again in the way that they were this time and we can't end up in another impasse like this. In our case, we have said that we want to see things like the petition of concern reformed so that it isn't able to be used and abused willy-nilly by parties in Stormont, but also that we want more openness and transparency when it comes to how decisions are made and how people, for example, in ministerial posts respond with both their spads and also, I have to say, backroom party apparatchiks, which appear to have been directing some of the ministers. So we need to deal with all of those issues. And my frustration at the moment is that we're sitting here in a week when we would normally be returning to Stormont to do our jobs after a Christmas recess. And we don't even have a talks process. We don't even have a means to get to the end that everyone says they want to be at, which is a restoration of the Assembly. And in the meantime, it's not just the rights that Patrick very correctly has highlighted in terms of equal marriage, in terms of women's access to healthcare, in terms of, for example, the victims of historical abuse. Also, I would argue the victims of the Troubles who are not getting things dealt with there with their pensions and other things. But more than that, it's the everyday things that people expect their government to deliver. Dignified healthcare, decent education, all of the myriad of things that government ought to be working on every day that are being held up because we're not there and because we have a Secretary of State who sees her primary role as defence of the Prime Minister rather than actually trying to drive forward a process in Northern Ireland that will get us back to the point where we have the restoration of devolution.
Well, this is your chance this morning as you are listening. Have you missed Stormont? And we don't ask that in a flippant way. Genuinely, do you think it's impacted your life in a negative or a positive way, the fact that we do not have a functioning executive? 030 30 80 55 55. Brenda, first call of the day. Good morning, Brenda. Go ahead.
Good morning, Vinnie. I just wanted to make the point that we constantly listen to the politicians and the parties arguing with each other. The feedback that I get from friends and members of the community is we tend to roll our eyes. I don't think it's right, though, that the parties are blaming each other, and we stand there and agree with that. We have to accept responsibility that we, are the, as the electorate, put these people in power. They have a tendency to use fear and control to put themselves back into their seats. We all know the Sinn Féin, DUP, Constance Saber-Rattlin, waving of the flags. But we, as the electorate, have to be responsible for the fact that our government isn't working. And we have to stop voting for the past and have to start voting for the future.
Jim Wells?
Well, I mean, Vinnie, what you failed to mention in the introduction is that in between, in the last 2 years, we had the Westminster 2017 election. As I've said in your programme many times, the DUP recorded its highest vote ever, almost 300,000. Now, that would indicate to me...
But just to address what Brenda said there, Jim, in terms of that saber rattling, that it's if you don't vote DUP, you get Sinn Féin. So that point in particular.
Well, and the reality is, under the system we have, and unless there's a strong unionist party to block Sinn Féin, yes, that's indeed what you do get, because Sinn Féin are eating the SDLP alive.
So Jim, you've just verified what I've said. DUP and Sinn Féin manipulate the electorate in their areas by telling them that if you don't vote for us, you're going to get them. And the electorate is fed up to the back teeth of listening to fear-mongering and saber-rattling.
Well, first of all, the electorate are not that gullible. The people know exactly what they're voting for. And the people in huge numbers just over a year ago voted for the DUP. I mean, they knew exactly where we stood. Almost 300,000, which is the largest vote the party has ever had. And people keep telling me the DUP are irrelevant, the DUP are losing support. Well, how can we be losing support and have record such an enormous vote?
Well, look at it from a different angle, Jim. Do you think are people voting for what they want, or are they voting for what they don't want?
Well, there's a mixture. There's a hardcore DUP vote of about 250,000, and then there's people who lent us their vote as a tactic to stop Sinn Féin taking First Minister and taking a majority on the executive. And people have a right in a democracy to use their vote tactically. But we would have emerged as the largest political party.
And they might be right to do that, but they can't complain that the politicians aren't sitting in Stormont making our society a better place for everybody when they're voting for you people to get back in again.
And that's their right, Brenda. That's their right to weigh up all of the manifestos and the policies and decide the party that most fits their particular view.
And they're giving away their right to complain about the current situation in Stormont.
That's democracy. People have a right to choose their elected representatives or not to choose, and that's what they've done. And that's your problem. The problem of so many is that increasing numbers have been supporting the DUP. And they've been doing with their eyes absolutely wide open as to where we stand on issues such as gay marriage, an Irish Language Act, and Arlene Foster as First Minister. They know our policies and they continue to vote for us.
Well, Brenda, what's your solution? What else could be done? Because as Jim said, you know, the electorate, you have the option when you go into that booth of who you vote for.
I don't vote for either Sinn Féin or the DUP. I would like to see an environment that my children can go to school and in a properly funded educational facility. I'd like to see a health service where my mother, who had a heart attack, wasn't left sitting for 9 hours in a chair in A&E until a bed became available. But I am not going to vote for the parties who are my servants to sit at home or sit in their offices, which they claim to be doing, looking after their current constituencies. We need to pull together as a society. People have to stop listening to the fear and the ridiculous behaviour of these people when it comes to other people's civil rights. I don't care if a gay people get married. It's none of my... I have gay friends that have the right to that. I have people in my life who are fluent Irish speakers.
I understand the point you're making, Brenda, but then you are ignoring the fact that huge numbers of people voted for the DUP and Sinn Féin. They decided
that
they wanted to put them...
We can't blame the politicians, Vinnie. We have to accept responsibility that this is a society that we live in because we choose to put these people in positions of power.
Okay, Brenda, thank you. Let's go to Wayne in Warren Point. Good morning, Wayne. Hello, Wayne, can you hear me? And we'll try someone else. Laura in Dundrum. Good morning, Laura.
Hi, I just had an idea. I think that Northern Ireland should be put on Gumtree. And if any country wants to bid to govern Northern Ireland, then we could have a wee bidding war, and within 12 hours, whoever bids the most could take over.
Do you think, would there be much interest, Laura?
I don't know. I think maybe Korea would offer 5 or 10 for us, to be honest with you. You never know, really.
Well, have you missed Stormont? Do you think that it has impacted on your life where we've been for the last 2 years?
Very much so, in that I would have been able to contact Stormont. I run a business, so I've been 15 years in business. I can contact the MLAs, but I think they feel sort of powerless to be able to really do anything, you know. So I do feel it does impact business in Northern Ireland very much so. But business in Northern Ireland just gets on with it. You know, it's very strong-minded people and hard-working people in Northern Ireland. So
I wonder how long that can continue, because if you look elsewhere, not just business, like some important decisions across the likes of the health service, infrastructure, schools, they've been effectively put on hold because there are no ministers in place
to make those decisions. That would be my main concern, is how, you know, you can only sustain it for so long and then something's going to give, you know. So to me, something needs to start moving quite quickly because business is under a lot of pressure.
And then Naomi Long, you have what some of it described as the slow decay across public services. Like, that's not going to instill any confidence in any voter.
No, of course it isn't. And I mean, to be clear, Vinnie, I'm not suggesting for a moment that if we were to walk back into Stormont today, that suddenly there would be extra money for the health service, extra money for education, and that all our problems would disappear. I mean, that's not the case. There would be very difficult decisions that would still need to be made. But the difference between then and now is that those decisions would be being made, that we would be in a position, for example, to look at the Bangor review, which has been sitting now gathering dust on a shelf because the health department have worked hard with the other departments to take that as far as they can, but they now need ministerial direction and decision making in order to be able to move it forward. There is, as you know, we have made a call that a similar review should be taken of the education system, which is in financial crisis, to see how we reform our education system to make it fit for purpose, but also to make it sustainable for the future. Again, no progress is being made with respect to that, because we're not in a position to be able to take decisions and give direction to civil servants. And despite the fact that a bill went through Parliament recently to allow them to take some decisions, it doesn't cover those large policy direction decisions that need to be taken around those key issues. So we could be influencing not just what's happening today, but what will be happening in 2 and 3 years' time.
Well,
and every day that goes by is a wasted opportunity to shape the future. And that's what I find frustrating. And it's why I have a lot of sympathy with, I think you said the last caller was called Laura and Brenda, who are saying, look, we want to see people vote for things. to change, to see things progress. We don't want people simply to be voting out of fear.
Okay.
And I mean, I have to say, I would challenge Jim. I mean, I have sat with Jim on a number of panels, and he's made the same point repeatedly, that people voted DUP and they're allowed to vote DUP out of fear if they want. And I accept all of that. But would Jim not be, would Jim not much rather that he was able to frame it and saying that people were voting for the DUP because of their constructive policies? That's not what he's saying. He's saying that it's fine.
And Jim Wells is there. Jim, you want to respond to that?
So long as they pile, Jim is saying that it's fine. So long as they can pile the votes up, it doesn't matter how they get them. But what I'm saying to Jim is, what's the point in having those votes if at the end of the election you're unable to influence what happens to the people who voted for you? You're unable to deliver for them. And that's what we're at the moment. So we need to look at how we use our mandates to actually make a difference.
Jim?
Well, first of all, I never used the phrase fear. I said the DUP had a hardcore support and others lent us their vote as a tactical vote, which is entirely in order. And in fact, Naomi Long has benefited in the past and her party from people voting tactically. I mean, that happens all the time. But what I'm saying is that people of Northern Ireland aren't fools. They watch the media, they read the manifestos, they look at the press, and they know exactly why and who they're voting for. Now, sometimes, as far as the Alliance Party is concerned, that can be a bit inconvenient because they don't vote for Naomi's party. But that's just a fact of life. That's a democracy. And we are have still retained the vast majority of the unionist support are voting DUP.
And don't walk with it, Jim, though. Don't walk with it, because the problem is that while you and Sinn Féin pile up the votes on each side through divisive politics, you're not doing the job of a politician, which is to deliver for the people who voted for you, Jim. I'm not criticising you for getting a big vote, to be clear about that. That's my issue. My issue is about what you do with your mandate when you have it.
You're going to
have to work with others to deliver.
Naomi, can you seriously say the DUP has not used its vote effectively in Westminster since the last election? Our 10 MPs have had an absolutely crucial
role. We're talking about the Assembly, Jim.
Okay.
Anyone who tells me their vote counts for nothing.
We're talking about the Assembly, Jim.
Well, the Assembly, Naomi, you and I would be back at Stormont on Monday morning if we were allowed to go. That's
well, no, both of our parties have said that we need structural reform.
What would the DUP have to do, DUP and Sinn Féin, Naomi, for you to go back into and the government with them?
Well, there are two things. There are, would we go back to the Assembly and would we go back into government? And I have to be honest with people. We are in a different position in the Alliance to the other parties in that it would be a matter of choice for us whether or not we went back into an executive, whereas with the DUP and Sinn Féin, there can't be an executive unless they go back in. So I don't want to mislead people by suggesting that we face the same choices. We don't. We would have the option to opt out of government, which isn't an option for the DUP and for Sinn Féin if there's to be an executive. But for us to go back into the executive, to go back into governing, we would need to see a complete change in how the executive operated, where we would go out, along with the DUP, along with the Ulster Unionists and the SDLP in the last executive, where SPADs were running the show rather than ministers. We would need to see more transparency and openness. We would need to see reform of the petition of concern that would both unlock decision making but also increase accountability of ministers and their staff when it comes to the Assembly, because previously the petition of concern was also abused by both parties to protect their own members from censure. And so all of those things would need to change for us to feel confident that we were going back into a government that could function. But to be clear, we aren't just sitting on the sidelines saying we need change. We have set out very clearly in Next Steps Forward how that change could be achieved. I have written to all the party leaders just this week, and I'm now going to meet with all of the party leaders, those in government and those in the Assembly, to sit down and say, how do we get from where we are now, which I think Jim and I would both agree is not where we want to be.
I agree with Naomi, to
where we want to be, which is a functioning Assembly that is delivering for the people who elected us.
Okay, I want to go back to the phones at this point.
We need to plot a course for that.
Okay, Wayne and Warren Point, are you there now? Good morning, Wayne.
Morning, Vinny.
Go ahead.
Vinny, I just think it is actually unreal. 2 years on, and basically the country has fallen apart. Like, today's headlines in the paper, parents are keeping schools going in education. Basically, yes, they all have a claim to fame regarding the DUP and Sinn Féin. They got the biggest vote in history. When they were both, doesn't matter if you're a DUP or who you are, you were there to put in the power to represent everybody. Everybody. And we are all suffering, and they get their pockets lined. They still get their wages, pay cut. Who makes a difference? They were signed to do a job, and in their mandate, they didn't turn around and tell the people that if they fail out with each other, they were going to leave us high and dry for 2 years. Well, everybody suffers. Everybody is paying the price, apart from the politicians, except for a few who want to go. But we've got two of the biggest parties in Northern Ireland bickering like a bunch of kids. And because they get paid, they can always say, oh, we get the majority vote. Who cares? We put them there, we take them out. And anybody who votes for them for McGeehan can turn around and say to themselves, we just deserve it because you just put the Muppets back in power. I'm sick of it. I've got a child with a disability that's being torn down for everything because there's no one there to help him. I have to fight for him, and then Muppets get their pockets lined.
Well, when you live in South Down, as does Laura, I know Laura very well. I don't know you, but I can assure you, you haven't been at my office in Kilkeel to raise that particular issue. So I would have never, if we don't actually know about the difficult problems you have with your daughter.
Well, I think that's one. We'll maybe have a discussion behind the scenes about that and connect the two of you. Wayne, thank you for that.